It's Great Mondays Radio. I'm Josh Levine, your host, founder of Great Mondays. We help executives from hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations build cultures that attract, engage, and retain top talent. If you'd like to be a guest on our program, hang out for about 20 minutes and I'll tell you how. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Great Mondays Radio. It is a great Monday indeed. I think a big challenge that something I've been chewing on a lot and I just struggle with how slow organizations are changing when it comes to their organizational structures and thinking about capabilities. We have a lot of changes happening all at once and not a lot of change happening inside of these organizations. And so today I've invited Jamie Tates to join us. She is founder and CEO of the Keystone Group. She is a strategic leadership and culture expert and has been having these conversations with her clients, thinking about organizational redesign, what capabilities we need for the future, and what does that mean for culture? I'm really, really interested to hear how she's been thinking about this, because it's something that I am laser focused on as well. So Jamie, welcome to Great Mondays Radio.
Thanks for having me. I know it's going to be a good podcast when we both have to say, okay, let's stop talking about this now because we want to record it for everybody else.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Got it. We're rolling. Just go. Oh. Fantastic. So, Jamie, you've been in this, in the professional world as a, let's call it a culture leader for a long time. You spent many, many years at Cargill. Kind of got your leadership chops there and have been running Keystone Group. Who do you typically work with? Just to set as a context for our conversation, who are you typically talking to?
Yeah. So our clients and really my relationship building area is high growth. And I say that because we've got startups that we're really helping to think towards the future because they're very agile and they've got to move fast. And we've got really, really large organizations that are trying to figure out how to move faster, right? They've got opportunity in the market. So we really look at our target market as they're growing, either the market's delivering that, or they know they have an idea or a niche that is really high growth. And in that high growth, that agility becomes a competitive advantage. And so that's what we help our clients with, both from strategy, how to prepare your leaders for that, and how to prepare your culture to grow and still be strong.
Yeah, no, I totally resonate with that. It's something that I think about a lot in my practice as well. And it's those are the moments when people, when leaders and organizations need some external perspective. Yes. And that's that, you know, those are the moments. Otherwise, it's like, I don't need to pay attention to this right now.
Yeah, we'll just keep doing totally what we're doing. And that's like the kiss of death for me. I'm like, I don't even want to have this conversation then, because in today's world, and you see this, the amount of change and the pace of change, no matter what business you're in, is fast and furious. And so even if you think we're good, I'm actually worried for you if you think you're good, because it means your competition's probably catching you, right, or passing you.
Yeah, right. It's almost like it's a game of which fire and which wastebasket, right? Like that's what you need to do.
Yeah.
All right. So you are starting to have a number of conversations, and obviously this is, I would say, our kind of moment of transformation or shifting extrinsic factors forcing us to think about change personally, professionally, organizationally. Started with COVID. You've started to have these conversations. Now we have AI. I feel like we're in these moments of like, but previously it was, oh, we should take advantage of this opportunity. Let's enter this market. That's why we should change. Let's launch a new product. Now we're in a decade, it feels to me like there are extrinsic factors, these things that are happening on the outside that are forcing us to change, which is a whole different ballgame because I have to respond and react and I don't even know what's about to happen. So when you're having these conversations, tell me a little bit about where your leaders, what's the kind of get into your leader's head and say, and tell us when you're having these conversations about organizational redesign, what is happening inside their brain that makes them go, uh-oh, we got to start thinking about this?
There's a lot of data, right? It's a lot of overwhelm. They're feeling it. So a lot of them come to us and say, we're feeling like we're behind. That's usually the statement that we hear. And we're like,
That's
talk more
interesting.
about that. But when you look at stats, like the average turnover in the United States today, as of last month, is about 3.6 years. And that's blended, right? Across some industries aren't that, but HR leaders are seeing that, right? They're looking at that data and saying, what does that mean? It means we need to be onboarding people faster and better, getting them productive faster than probably any of our onboarding programs are capable of at this point. We need to knowledge transfer a lot better than we ever did before, which requires a different thinking about the org, right? Are people working in teams? Are they working on their own? Like, how do we, if they're working with a customer, we don't want a single point of failure. So they're seeing all of these pain points. And they're looking at it and going, we think the structure for our organization is different in the future, and we don't know where to start. That's the
That's
biggest fear.
amazing. Okay, so I almost just want to like sit here for a moment because I can't believe, I'm in disbelief that you would have anybody come to you and tell you, no, not that anybody, but that there is a goodly number of leaders that go, you know what? I think our organization, the structure of our organization needs to change. I mean, are you telling me that you're really seeing that many folks that are in that much duress and stress? Like, you have to get to a breaking point, right? You're talking about feeling to really go, I need to redesign this whole place.
And again, not that they're coming and saying we're going to blow it all up and rebuild it, but I think this is also part of our target market is
Okay,
our
that's
the
fair.
HR leaders, right, or the executives that we're working with know there's probably a better way, and they're willing to understand maybe different ways of thinking, right? Shift their perspective. So that's who we work with. So I want to put that caveat out there. I don't know that that's the
Fair.
standard in all
Fine, fine,
arenas.
fine. Yeah.
But I do think, so I would say half of our clients this year have org redesign or workforce planning or something of those words on their strategy.
Okay.
So that's promising to me. Now, here's the problem is we're halfway through the year. And not we're not helping all of them with that. We just know their strategy because we do a lot of that work, and we know none of them are where they want to be on it. So what it's telling us is, yes, it's awesome that you're there and you're thinking about the future, but they don't know how to manage it. They don't know how to think differently. So think about we have a lot of legacy businesses, and especially I'm in Minneapolis. You've got companies that have been here for around for 100 years. Cargill is a great example of it. And how do you, it's like shifting something that's worked for 80 years or 100 years and say, we're going to blow it all up. So that's not aligned to their culture. So I think a lot of them are trying to figure out how to do the org redesign that feels true to their culture, and every culture is different. That's where they're getting hung up, because most of them would look at it and say, listen, if you told me I had to tomorrow, I could tell you a bit better what we should be designed like. The problem would be is getting all the humans changed,
Of course.
right? And on board with that.
Of course. Of course. One of the, I mean, all org redesigns are not equal.
Right.
And they're going to be different, like you said, for a 100-year-old company versus a startup. It is, my question is, what are the driving factors or what are the questions that you need to answer as a leader to determine what kind of change you need to make in the design of your organization, the way that it's structured?
I think the number one thing is you have to take your strategy, whatever your organization wants to achieve, right? Whatever that is, and you have to look at your capabilities and say, do we have the capabilities to actually achieve that? Because what's happening is most organizations are not achieving their strategy, and we're blaming it on other things when really the root is we chose a strategy and said, go forth. And we didn't change accountability, expectations, reskilling capabilities. And so the organization is trying to do something completely different with what they had before. And we're feeling that pain, right? And that tension.
What are the top capabilities that you see organizations falling short on that they do not have?
So I'll take it a step up from that and then answer your question. I think organizations are first falling short in truly assessing strengths and capabilities of the people they have today.
Oh.
So I'll give you an example. So we do culture assessments. We come into organizations and we do a survey, but we don't just do a survey because we don't believe a survey is a data point. Then we take that survey, we dissect it, and we do focus groups based on what they told us so that we can dive in and get real examples for the company to take action on. In one of those focus groups, one of my facilitators was pulled aside by a 26-year-old engineer. And he said, "I need your advice." And he said, "I'm the low man on the totem pole, right? I understand that. I've got the least amount of experience. And so when I joined my team, we have this regulatory reporting that we have to do every week. It takes 6 hours. They gave it to me. Totally understand." He said, "But I figured out how to automate it and do it in 30 minutes, and I haven't told anyone." So I want to let that settle for a second, because when I share that, when I speak all over the country to CEOs and executives, and I just let that settle, because what I tell them is, no matter how great your culture is right now, you have a bunch of people like that in your organization. And what that means is, if we knew he had those strengths, what we should do with that wonderful engineer for his good and the business's good is send him to every part of the organization and say, go help them be more efficient as well, because that's bottom line profitability. But we don't. We bring him in with a certain resume and we stick him in a team and say he's the youngest on the team. And we don't actually mine for the strengths that many of these people have. And I, not to get into all the generational stuff, right? I have four Gen Z kids, college age. We aren't prepared for what they're bringing to the workforce. Yes, they have their issues. I live with them. I know they have their issues. But they also bring a whole different level of processing power, innovation, and how they think. And none of the organizations that they're going to are ready for them. So when I talk about capabilities, that's part of the hard work that I'm talking about.
All right. Some questions about that, but maybe answer my other question first, which is which capability. So we need to know about how to, and then I'm gonna sort of make a note about what I want to ask you next. But
So,
tell me what most organizations are missing when they're thinking about moving forward on their strategy.
so I think they're missing behavioral capabilities, things like growth mindset, people that aren't deterred by that didn't work or let's try it again, right? That kind of like an idea that we can be better and smarter and do things differently than we do them today. It's really that change agent mentality. They're not building that in their leaders, and then therefore they're not building it in their employees. So that's a capability that is an expectation competency at some level of the organization that we just don't see enough. The other one is process and tech, right? Automation and process and tech. We think that that's for like we've got to go hire a bunch of AI people. Not really. When you think about that engineer is a process and tech, you know, how to make us more efficient and run more efficiently and leaner likely. So what most organizations think is we just add more headcount. And this is where culture has an issue is we fight for headcount. We have more pain over here, so we need more people next year. Instead of stepping back and saying, wait a minute, what if we just hired a process engineer to help all three of our teams come in and work with the people we have today and make us more efficient? That's what AI is. Automation and AI is really what most organizations are not fully understanding. They're seeing AI as this big, scary, like huge investment, really complicated thing. Most AI initiatives are starting as automation. How do we just do the work like that engineer did and do it in 30 minutes instead of 6 hours? And then we can redeploy that person to do other things.
So here's my other here's the other piece that you're bringing up for me, which is we organizations are structured to fill in particular skill sets and roles. And what I hear you saying is you're not just hiring those things, you're hiring a whole human,
Correct.
but our organizations are not built to understand how to see and use the whole human, the what they can bring. Is that a fair way to put it?
Yes, we need to move from traditional hierarchical to more of a matrixed environment, right? Is the next stage of maturity, which means we look at our resources differently, right? We optimize our workforce in a different way. And then we're seeing some larger organizations, more mature, go to a helixed environment. So if you think of like a DNA strand, where every employee kind of has two reporting structures. One might be more into a center of excellence for whatever their engineering, accounting, whatever their degree is in. And then they also might be part of a team that has some more fluidity, right? Project-based work. And they're almost kind of farmed out. Now that takes a high degree of maturity in an organization. So I'm not saying everybody should go to that, but the most innovative companies that are moving the fastest, they're having to. Because they want to use their resources in a more fluid way. And it's very hard for traditional structured businesses to do that. So, my guidance is start moving to a matrixed environment. One of the best things you can do for your culture is to create cross-functional projects that people get to be a part of for the year in your strategy and say, let's pull these five people from disparate parts of the organization together and have them solve this. It goes better. You're building collaboration, you're improving trust, right? You're building your culture while you're getting the work done.
I'm zooming out and thinking, oh shit, like the reason why we have these slots and these roles is for what we believe from a machine era perspective to be efficacy, efficiency,
Yes.
right? Like we're trying to make it a machine, and it did work like that 20, 30, 40 years ago,
Correct.
but we are stuck with a paradigm where we say, this is what we're measuring success against. Are you hiring these people to do these things? Because you just have to get this shit done. But the problem is that whole premise is now false.
It's flawed. And if you think so, in 1980, the lifespan of a college degree was 40 years. That's what they believe, right? So it's exactly what you're talking about. Do you know what the lifespan of a college degree? I'm paying for college for four kids. Do you know what the lifespan of their degrees is?
10 years.
4.2 years.
How do you, this is a
So
question we're having in our house right
daughter,
now.
who's
Like,
a marketing
what are you
major,
measuring in? What does it matter? Like, I don't know.
right? My daughter, who's a marketing major, has professors telling her that by the time she graduates, what she's learning is out of date because it's moving too fast. So, we have a whole generation of kids, I'll call them kids because I have kids, that's what I call them, but of young adults who are expecting the company they join to then help them bridge that gap into what the company needs, the capabilities that teach me, train me. I'll continue learning. And the companies are coming in and saying, hey, you've got a marketing degree, so go sit in this box. And then they're leaving after a year, which is what's happening.
I mean, this to me is show me what employees want, right? Show me the impact that I'm having, and also show me my growth path. Show me how I'm going to benefit and how I'm going to learn, because I know that that is, I've been trained as a Gen Zer, right? Like I've been, not me, but these people, quote unquote, I've been trained to understand that I need to learn. Things change so quickly, and you're coming into an organization where the assumption isn't a change, complete, cycle of renewal of cells every,
Yes.
4 to 8 years or whatever it might be, right? Like
And
that's.
the other issue is when you say, help me grow, help me, a lot of long tenured people like us, I'm not going to say old, but we are, hear that and go, oh, you're just a climber. And this is a big rub with the generations right now that we're hearing and what they're actually saying. So the CHRO of Hilton wrote a great blog earlier this year that lateral is the new up. And when we hear these younger generations say, I want a promotion, I want to go, do you know why they're asking for that? Because they want challenge. They're bored out of their mind and they think the only way to get challenge is to move up. What if we could challenge them by saying, you're going to spend a year here and then a year here, right? It's true, like management training programs, and you're going to go learn all sorts of stuff and probably figure out what you really like to do. And so we'll figure out what you're really good at, and then we'll put you in your long term. To me, when you see the stats like we're seeing about entry level positions going away and companies don't know how to hire entry level anymore, you should be hiring talent into programs like that where they're still achieving things for the business, but giving them a couple years to go into a role that actually makes sense for them and the company. Your retention would go through the roof if you did that as an HR leader.
Thinking about, okay, so this is actually the rejoinder to I had about 5 episodes ago, maybe 5 or 10 episodes ago, had this conversation, right? Like why you still need to have, higher entry level interns, right? Like all that stuff. And that, what you're describing is additional. So it's actually two ways. This is really powerful. You are providing more than those folks could get elsewhere by providing this sort of lateral tour, but you're also gaining more in that you're l building the muscle of the organization to be a little more dynamic. And you've got, smart young folks that, sure, maybe you could have AI, doing your contracts, but these folks are going to come in. The point is that they're going to bring in more information that you don't have learning, and they're going to teach you. And it's really a whole nother way of looking at this. And this is like these thoughts are forming in real time. You're not hiring for that machine era efficacy, because that will fail because AI does that stuff. What you're hiring for is this matrixed, helixed
Problem solving.
organization,
Yes.
all the whole person. You're going to give them more whole people, and they're going to bring their whole people. And that is going to make much more sense for the future of the
It's a
organization.
competitive advantage. And I would tell you, our strongest clients are also reimagining how they do this at the top of the organization.
Say more.
So you want to get to the C-suite? You better have sat in three or four boxes at this level of totally different parts of the organization to go up. So it's no longer like the, like you were in accounting, then you became a controller, then you became the director of finance. Then you get, If you want to make it to the C-suite, it better look like this and like this and like this and like this and like this, because we need you to understand all parts of the organization to be an effective executive. That's what's coming. That's really, so that's not just affecting Gen Z, young people. It's our generation should want to also move laterally to take challenges in other areas. That's a growth mindset. And the strongest and the most competitive companies in the next 10 years are going to be doing that, I can guarantee you.
Are you familiar with the T-shaped human, that concept, right? Really deep in one, but have experience across many. It seems like maybe it's shortening the stem of the T and then thickening the arms, maybe, or something like that.
And the stem of the T is still where you have passion, right? So if my daughter really loves marketing, like, could she go and work in other parts of the organization and still take a marketing lens to the work that they do? Absolutely. Because it's part of it, right? So it's helping them not just apply the skills to like a current job title, it's helping them apply the skills to just business. And we don't, the other caveat with all of this that we're talking about, because some people are listening right now going like, how in the world, like, is it requires a higher level of leadership that has not been invested in. You cannot do what we're talking about with subpar leaders. It won't work.
Okay, but now you need to define, right? So you're saying, oh, we just need better leaders. Okay, what does that mean, right? When
We
you're
need,
talking, give me specifics
yeah,
around
what
that
we would
claim.
call is we need more conscious leadership. Right? Love, care, cares about the human, and not that all leaders don't, but instead of caring about the results, knows that if they build trust, if they create positive conflict and, and good, healthy discussion and debate, the results are going to come. It's a change in how leaders, your most senior engineer is not your best leader. Your best salesperson is not your best sales manager, right? We all know this.
We know this.
Most organizations have fallen into that trap time and time again, and we have an entire generation of leaders who have been under invested in woefully, don't actually like leadership in the leadership that's required for the future. That was just the next rung, right? They knew they had to go through that to move up.
Right, that's
And
how you
so
make more money.
I think there's this reckoning that's happening, and you're seeing it between the generations of like, I'm not going to put up with that. My kids' generation, right or wrong, which pains me because I'm paying for college, they will be like, forget it. I'm going to go work at Starbucks and make $20 an hour and not put up with this. And yes, maybe I have to change my life a little bit. And our generation can't even fathom
That's right.
how they could possibly do that, but
That's
they're
right.
just not willing to put up with it. Now, talk to them when they're in their 30s, and maybe they're going to have to because they want to have a house and right, do all the things. But it's just this really interesting, chaotic swirl that we are in most organizations. And when I go back to my original statement, when HR leaders are saying we feel like we don't have the right structure for the future, it's because they're feeling this, right? They're feeling this undercurrent and they don't know what to do about it or what the actual root of it is.
So interesting. There's so many.
We're recording for like 3 hours, right? Because we got a
Right.
lot to
Okay. So that, yeah, there's it. It might my. I'll just sort of posit this, which is with AI and other technological capabilities, you can build for today, but you can't build for tomorrow. For that, you need the humans. And that is where a lot of these organizations are falling short. We started with this idea of the fire, you know, which fire, which wastebasket we need to address. And those fires are being caused because we're operating from a previous structure and paradigm. And what we really need to be doing is allowing the simple tech, or the tech to do the simple tasks for today, automate the 6 hour report into 30 minutes, and elevate the humans into a cross-functional, multimodal, right? Like, I contain multitudes.
Yes.
That machines can't do that,
Correct.
and you've got to be able to plan and replan and replan for the future.
And I believe if you do that and you take that approach, what you're saying to the humans, your culture can thrive in that because people are doing their best work. The business is thriving, meaning top line and bottom line. Isn't that what we all want?
So that's the good news, right? It's like, here is a benefit. And this is something I've always argued about culture, which is like, it actually improves people's lives and bottom lines, right? So this way of thinking, hey, come in, whole human. Let's give you an expansive view, not just, oh, you went and studied finance, you went and studied coding. I don't need a coder. I don't know if you saw that article in the New York
Yeah,
Times this
I
week
did.
about the coders getting jobs at Chipotle, right? So it's that's not what we're hiring for. What we really need to hire for is the human being and their ability to intersect all of their experiences and provide more experiences to them to intersect.
And we need to help the human beings actually understand those strengths. The best thing you could do for a college graduate is to help them understand where their passions are and how those passions play out in the workforce, not just on a job, a bullet on a job title. I think we've got to move beyond this, and it's not a simple answer to doing that, but it does start with conversations and getting to know people more as humans than just as a number that is like filling a role.
Tangent, are you advocating, are we advocating, is this concept advocating for the traditional liberal arts degree, since we've talked about humans and humans going to college? I don't know.
So what I've told all of my kids is there's requirements for me to pay for college, a major and a minor, meaning, right, you can know you're passionate about something, but then you have to have a certificate or a minor or something else and something different. And you have to study abroad, or I don't pay for college. I don't care where, I don't care what. And the reason I have that requirement, partly because I did that, and it was probably the greatest shift in my me as a human, is that's the kind of investment that will make them really well-rounded employees, right? And humans, and no matter what they do. Like, how many, and there's probably stats out there, how many people are actually still working in the what they got a degree in? You know what my degree was in? Tech, computer science level stuff. I haven't done that in 20 years. We already know, right, that this change
We
is
already
happening.
know that the major you're going to get is not going to be what you're going to be.
Right.
Like, what are
Let's
we
keep
spending all
that
this money
pressure up.
for? Yeah.
Right. Well, and that's another thing too, right? So we gave our kids that option. In fact, my youngest one debated it for a while. Like, do I even want to go? Do I want to spend this money? Do I want to? Because we're like, well, you can use it for something else. You want to start a business? We'll help you. Like, right? Like, there's other avenues. And I think we need to be having those conversations too. So that's a whole nother topic.
We'll bring it back.
Yeah.
Oh man, lots more to think through as the next 12, 18, 24 months kind of evolve. This has been really interesting thinking about what capabilities organizations need in order to think about what capabilities organizations need is kind of how I would put it. And breaking out of the structure that has become the stricture of, restricting these organizations and old thinking, and how to bring how the value of bringing young humans into an organization, and what redefining an entry-level role and roles in general, to your point,
Yes.
should be.
Right.
Really, really, really fascinating stuff. Jamie Tates, thank you so much for coming on. Founder and CEO of Keystone Group, strategic leadership and culture expert. You can learn more about her and her work at Keystone Group, intl.com. Amazing to have you on Great Mondays Radio. Thank you for providing such an interesting conversation and sharing a little a bit about what you know with the Great Mondays community.
It was so fun. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio. Hey, if you want to be a guest, head over to radio.greatmondays.com. And if you think this episode was interesting and your friends and fans would enjoy it, please share on social media. And if you want to get more people to understand the power of company culture in business today, please rate and review Great Mondays Radio on your podcast feed. It really helps us reach more people. If you want to hear more candid conversations with culture leaders, subscribe to Great Mondays Radio. I'd love to connect with you. Find me on LinkedIn at AKA Josh Levine, on YouTube at Great Mondays, and you can always email me, josh@greatmondays.com. Find out more about our work with hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations at greatmondays.com. I'm Josh Levine. Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio.